The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes aglow. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store. But the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. A pair of hop-along boots and a pistol that shoots is the wish of Bonnie and Ben. Dolls that will talk and will go for a walk is the hope of Janice and Jen.
And Mom and Dad can hardly wait for school to start again.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go.
There's a tree in the Grand Hotel, one in the park as well, the sturdy kind that doesn't mind the snow.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Soon the bells will start, and the thing that'll make them ring is the carol that you sing right within your heart.
Beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store.
But the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. Sure, it's Christmas.
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length, where we discuss all things E-Mini, along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. Today's Monday, 28th day of November, 2011. Let's take a quick look at the numbers. The Dow is down, or no, did I say down? Hello, Mike.
Yes.
Good afternoon.
Hello, Dwayne.
The Dow's
good
up afternoon. 312 points. The S&P is up 35. The comp is up 86. Ho, ho, ho. Santa Claus rally? Anybody?
Yeah, it seems to be the start of one.
Thanksgiving rally, not so much. Kind of a down day. Wednesday.
We missed it by a couple of days.
Yeah. But now we can call it the Santa Claus rally. Although it's not officially December, but it is past Thanksgiving. And I noticed that people are starting to put their lights up, and it's looking a lot like Christmas. And on Thanksgiving Day, my wife and the kids decorated our tree. And so the season is in full swing.
Yes.
And
yes,
retailers got a huge surprise over the weekend. People turned out and spent money. More money than they've ever spent, which nobody expected with the economic turmoil that we're caught up in. Black Friday was a smashing success, no pun intended. People got hurt, they got pepper sprayed, they bought TVs were so affordable, people were buying these 65-inch TVs only to find out they couldn't get them home. Wouldn't fit in the car. Can't tie it on the roof of a Yugo. So it was a dilemma. Oh, man, I got this really cheap TV. Now I got to figure out how to get it home. I mean, you could get 65-inchers for, I think, $9.97 at Walmart. LCD, not LED, not plasma. But LCD. So great deals out there. A lot of people took advantage of it. Today is, of course, Cyber Monday. It's supposed to be the biggest day for online shopping. We'll see how that turns out. But again, in fact, high-end retailers were not even mentioning going into the weekend, going into the holiday. High-end retailers were not even mentioning Black Friday on their websites, because they just weren't. Then all of a sudden, there it is. So, I don't know what the economists will make of this. 10 years from now, when they look back, they'll probably have something clever to say, like, well, you know, they knew it was the last chance they were going to have before the world imploded. And Barack took their credit cards away. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to say, but we'll find out if we live long enough. All right, Michael, I'm assuming you want to do the recap of our live trading room this morning. For those of you that are new, welcome. Glad you could join us. Hope you'll join us. We've been doing this for 6 years, closing in now on 7 years. True story. We've gone through a couple different variations. We've been in the current variation now for quite some time. Not really sure how to put a number on that. But we have been on the airwaves for quite a while. So glad you've, for those of you who are returning for like your 9,000th time. Wait, that math doesn't work. all right, you get my point. There's, what, 20 trading days in a month. So, in theory, without holidays, we could do 240 broadcasts a year. Right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Correct.
So, over 6 years.
240. That would be 1,440.
Wow. Why does that number sound familiar?
1,440.
It's not a fib number, is it?
No, our last move down dropped down to the 1140 area, 1148, right in that area. But if you were looking at it, taking off the first one,
so actually
been
it's
down
been
at 1440.
More than 6 years, going on 7 years, but you got to take out the holidays, so we're probably closing in on like episode number 1440 plus.
Mm-hmm.
1500. That's a lot. That's a lot of radio.
It is.
Okay, I said I would give it to you. We had a great morning in the live trading room. A lot of new people in on the free trial. If you've not taken the free trial, I encourage you to do so. It is absolutely free. All you need to do is go to cfrn.net/apply. No credit card required. Just fill out the form. We'll shoot you the link, password. Tomorrow morning you'll be in there watching us taking live trades in a live market with real money. I only wish someone had allowed me to watch over their shoulder and see them do that when I started trading, but they wouldn't. Go ahead.
Did you want to take just a minute here and go over the swing trade alert, or did you want to do that after I do the recap?
I figured that you would probably want to, you know, encapsulate it on the video.
Okay.
I'll cover it briefly, guys. We had a swing trade alert that went out on Friday at 10:47 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And that alert said, consider being long, above 1172. High of the day was 1171 and a quarter. For anyone that had a resting buy order at 1172 last night when we gapped open, you were filled. If you didn't have the resting buy order because you were a little jittery and you're like, yeah, you know, weekend, I don't know, I'm going to wait for the open Sunday night, not a problem. Because you still had your opportunity here. We pulled back to, let's see, 71 right there. And then here we pulled back to,
it was 69 and change, I think, right?
Oh, tooltips, come on.
There.
70 and a half. And on the open, we pulled back to 69 and a quarter. So see, even at the open, that 72 was available. And as you can see from my chart here, today's high is at 96. Michael, do the math.
Well, overnight, that would be $1,200 a contract. 72 to 96. All right, that's 24 points.
96, 72 equals. Hey, that's 24 points.
That is correct.
Okay, the beta test, guys, it is full. We've closed that out, as you know, those of you who have been tuned in for the last few weeks. We're in the final beta, and we have a control group, and we're working with them, and we're getting them out alerts via email, via the Twitter feed, via text messages on their cell phone. And we'll be rolling out the finished product by the end of the year, beginning of next year. We just got to iron out all the kinks and the bugs and stuff. That's what a beta test is all about. You okay?
Yes. All right. We are good.
Okay. Well, sir, if you'd like to take these charts, please feel free.
I will do so. Thank you. All right. They should be switching over as I speak here. All my screens are purple right now.
Man, I rebooted the whole farm over the weekend. Man, mm-hmm. It's incredible. Everything's so peppy. And the volume's loud. And, I may do that more often.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I had to do the same thing. Hang on a second, I'm lining up my recording window. There we go. All right. And today's date is November 28th. Ready? We're going to start this recording in 3, 2, 1. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Monday, November 28th, 2011. We want to go over the trades that set up this morning, the ones that set up, the ones we took, the ones we didn't take, and we'll try to go over why as well. I'll start right off with the results. Oops, not that one. That was after we made our initial 24 ticks. There you go. We made our 24 ticks in the first half an hour this morning, and then we switched gears into the training mode, and you could see the results were that other one that I had just brought up here. But I'll go over that in a few minutes. I also took, in training mode, I took a YM trade. I lost 6 ticks on the YM trade, and you can see that right there. But let me get back to the beginning of the day here. And we'll go over this. All right. Let's see. Right at the open, there was a trade right here that it had pretty much happened by the time I noticed it, so I didn't take it. But we had a fresh bubble down here. Now, for everyone that's new, we had quite a few new people in our live trading room this morning. I'm going to go over the setup play by play here, and it's going to be recorded, so this will be out on YouTube. You'll be able to get to it through the links, the live trading room results links on the website. I think there's one of those links on every page. Now, first thing you look for is the bubble down here. The bubble is the red bands getting outside the black bands on the CF chop bands. Okay, you get the bubble, and this is on a 4-tick range chart. You get a higher swing and the first pullback down to the BBC after the bubble. Right, you only get one pullback per bubble, and in this case, it was right here. The entry, you have been rounding the BBC up to the nearest tick, would have been 88.75. So you would have been trying to get in there at 88.75. It would have been an MIT order, so you would have gotten in at 89. 2 points risk would have put your stop down here at 87. You can see it drew down almost to the stop, but not quite. And then it moved up the 2 points in favor of the trade. All right. The second one we actually did take. We missed that first one. The second one we actually did take. And you can see the bubble is much more pronounced down here. The red line's outside the black lines on the bands. We had a swing pivot right here. And it pulled back down here. We had almost no pain in this trade. Our entry was at 90.75. We had an MIT order at 90.75. Put us in at 91. It drew down 2 ticks. And then it moved up to our profit target of 2 points. And that's what you see right here. All right, that was the trade we took this morning to reach our primary goal of 2 points a contract per day. And we got that in the first half an hour. You can see it was 9.951 when it had hit that level. After that, price went into a range here. It was trading sideways for quite a while. You can see the bands got inside here, and they stayed inside from 10 all the way through to right here, almost 11 o'clock. They popped out, but we didn't have any trade set up here. All right. They went back inside, and they stayed inside pretty much the rest of the morning. So we didn't trade any more this morning on the 4-tick range chart. All right. There were only 2 setups on the 4-tick range chart this morning. And that was all there was. All right, there's nothing else. Even now, there's nothing else on the 4-tick range chart. Still going sideways. We did take a trade over here this morning. It wasn't on the 10,000 contract, though. It was on the 2100 tick. And that was a Mike R trade. That was the four ticks that we took out of that you saw a minute ago. We had this bearish cross right here with the pullback up to the BBC. I shorted right there. And right here, it was at plus a point and a half. And it was having trouble getting through this area right here. You can see on this particular bar right here, it bounced all the way back up here past our entry, even into the risk a little bit right there, before it came back down and bounced again off of this level right here, 1192. Our target was 91.75. All right, because we've gotten in at 90, 93.75. We ended up taking 1 point over here. Once I saw it was having trouble right here at this level, I moved my stop up to plus 1 point, and it got us out with 1 point profit right here. All right. After that, it eventually just struggled and struggled right here. It never made it in this area down to the 91.75, and that's still where it is right now. It's still stuck in that range. All right. That was all there was on the 2100 tick. On the 10,000 contract, we had such a huge gap up this morning. 10,000 contract didn't give us any opportunity until over here, but that wasn't really an opportunity because the cycle was not in favor of the long trade right there, all right, and it wasn't in favor of it over here, and it just wasn't in favor of it pretty much all day. Right here, it was, you know, we had a bearish cross. We might have been able to sell here, a pullback up to the BBC. Cycle again, not in favor of it. If you look at the DMT down here, it's just crossing back and forth and back and forth. And it's just a mess. We're in this tight range right on top of support. No trades in there. We had a bullish cross here with no pull away. We had a bearish cross here with no pull away. So there's nothing there. There are no trades generated in there. All right. Over here on the YM, we had, let's look at this. We had a trade right here after the open, but this high momentum bar that came down, I decided not to take that trade. There was another one right here. This was a divergence trade based on the combo indicator down here, with the cycle part of the combo indicator being up here in the overbought area and the other lines being down in the oversold area. I would have been looking for a close above, which we had here by just a tick on this green bar right here. I didn't even realize it when it happened. But we would have been looking to enter in right there. And that went up to the profit target had you taken the trade. We had a bearish cross here with the pullback up. I missed this one. You can see that's why I have an orange arrow on it. Price pulled back up here, bounced off the BBC, and pushed down for a good 15-point profit if you wanted to take it. Over here, I had entered into a divergence trade here. You see this was bearish divergence because the cycle part of the combo indicator is down at the bottom. It's oversold, so we're expecting price to move down, with the faster bars moving up, just showing that there was divergence between the longer term and the shorter term direction. So what we look for in that case is an area for the shorter term direction to bounce off of to continue back down to the longer term direction. It did do that, and then we closed down below the MA1. Right here I went short. It gave us about 6 or 7 ticks profit at 1 point down to this level right here, put in a double bottom. I should have taken my risk off at that point, but I didn't. I was expecting it to get down here to the 11,500 level, the even number. Excuse me. But it did not go there immediately. It came back up and stopped me out to the tick right here before attempting to go down again. Got within a couple ticks of that 11,500 level, then moved up. All right. Right here on the move up, there was a high momentum bar again that pulled back right here after the bullish cross, the first pullback, and that moved up from 17, yeah, it moved up 20 points. And since then, it's just been a bunch of chop. All right, that's the way the morning's been. Unfortunately, it hasn't been a fantastic morning. Now, all that said, on the Globex, I'll go over this in the recap. But I will also try to. I want to bring up a chart here. I want to bring up an hourly chart to put it into the. Yeah, let me try. I can't do it with that one. I was going to say I want to bring up an hourly chart here so I can go over the swing trade that happened in the Globex. All right, let me show you. It happened. It was triggered Friday afternoon, which was here the 25th. Right, it was triggered at 8:30. The second bar right here. This bar right here is what triggered the trade Friday afternoon. Now, at that point, we had said buy above 1172. The market never went above 1172 on Friday afternoon. It went as high as 1171 quarter. It drew all the way down to 11, I don't know, whatever that is, 1149 quarter. And then in the Globex last night, the market gapped up 18 points and opened here. at 1172. It opened at 1172. So we said buy above 1172. You had your opportunity to enter the long trade right there. This was the first beta long trade that went out, a beta swing trade that went out to everybody that signed up for it. If you signed up for it and you didn't get it, then most of the problems that we've been having is not that people didn't get it, it's that people got it more than once. But that's not a bad problem to have, okay? We suggested entering here at 1172. You can see right now we're plus 21 points from that, and that was midnight. It was about 18 hours ago that that trade went on. All right, so there was a 21-point potential gain here in 18 hours from the first swing trade that went out to all the beta people, all the control group that had signed up for the beta. All right, where do we think it's going to go now? Well, we don't know, honestly. I would say 1210. If we get through 1200, you know, this 95-96 area has been tough for a long time. If you're in the trade right now, I would consider moving your stops up, locking something in right around this level right here, right around 1180. If you are not in the trade, I would say wait for the next one at this point. But target-wise, 1200. Now, if we get through 1196, 1197, that gave us a lot of trouble last week. And if we get through there, get through the 1200 level, I think 1210 is an area that I think may stop us and send us back down. You know, we'll see what happens as we progress through the week. But something to consider, and we'll keep updating you as the trade goes on. All right, so that is our first swing trade for all the beta folks. I'm going to flip this back to a 10,000 contract chart. And I am going to wrap it up here for the morning. So again, we got our 2 points this morning, 24 ticks. All right, that's what's going to go in the recap on the website and in the totals. All right, that is it. Okay, recording has stopped. Does anyone have any questions about anything at this point? I know there was one thing this morning. The fellow's not in here. One of the guys in the live trading room this morning had asked Dwayne and I to go over trading history or something like that. I'll have to look it up. We'll do it tomorrow.
By the way, the results of the live trading room page that is updated.
Thank you.
It's updated through Wednesday, and if you upload today, I'll make sure it's uploaded today.
One thing
I want to say about the swing trade, and you know, a lot of emails, a lot of questions coming in from the beta testers about target, where you're going to get out. You know, we shared this morning in the live trading room, and if you weren't there, wish you were, but we talked about how far we had moved, what the potential was for continued move, and how much we would need to risk to see how much further gain we could take. How hard is it for you to go back to that hourly chart, Michael?
Oh, it's not hard. It's pretty easy. Okay. You can do that. There we go.
All right. Now, we talked in the live trading room about potentially if someone wanted to. First, we said at 1196, which was a weekly trading zone last week, we said this might be a good place if you're still long the trade to take your profit. Anywhere in here, 1200, you know, give that some consideration. I then said, you might consider moving your stop up to, at the time, it was 1178, as I recall. Now, at 1178, what you're doing is you're locking in 6 points on the trade. You're long from 72. Okay, you bought it on a stop. Now, from 78 to where the market was at that time, there was 14 points above. So in other words, you're saying I'm willing to give back 14 points because you're moving your stop up to 1178, locking in 6 points. Nothing wrong with making 6 points, but you have 20 points on the table. So what you're saying is I'm willing to risk 14 of the points I have on the table to see if this thing can go higher. Isn't that what a person is saying, Michael?
That is what they were saying.
Okay.
Yes.
And that's not
risking
a bad thing.
14.
Yeah, we're not saying that's a right or wrong way. We're just trying to help you assess the situation. And I know that most of the beta testers are tuned in, so that's really why I'm going into some detail here. All right. So, you move your stop, theoretically, to 78. You lock in 6 points. You're risking 14 to see if this thing goes any higher. Okay. If you're going to risk 14, then I would then you have to think, okay, what is my potential gain? I'm willing to risk 14 of the points I've already earned. Okay. What is my gain? All right. So we're sitting at 90. We were sitting up at 96 at that time. So let's go 1196 plus 14. And because if you're going to risk 14, you at least want to get 14, right? So that means the market's got to go to 1210. Can it? Of course it can. But that 1200, man, that's a big round number. And we already know that the 96.97 has just been a bear. It's been a weekly trading zone, if I'm not mistaken, for a couple of weeks in the past. And it's just been a real area where the market's had difficulty getting through on more than one occasion. So you're sitting here going, okay, if I'm going to risk my 14 points, that means I'm also saying that I think the market can go to 1210. Because otherwise, is it really worth risking your 14 points? So, that was the discussion this morning in the live trading room. Do you take your 20 points now, and if the market should continue on, you have no remorse, or do you stick around? Now, these are the variables we're working with. Okay, out of the last 31 signals, the market has traveled 1,066 ES points. The largest being 99, the smallest being 5, one producing no profit. But I don't want you to hear those big numbers because they aren't the ones that are really important. What I want you to hear is that the average swing so far has been 34 points. Okay, so the biggest was 99. The one we just finished, the one that slid into home base there just prior to Thanksgiving, that was 96 points to the downside. Okay, but that's an outlier. Okay, that's not the norm. The norm, if and I don't even like giving it that term or even saying the average, but I mean numbers are numbers, and so you have to do this kind of thing. The average is 34. So if the average is 34 and you have 20, man, am I going to hold out for that other 14 so I can make the average and be 34? Or do I take my 20? Again, there's no right or wrong answer here. It's simply a decision that you, based upon your personality, your account size, your risk profile, you know, all of those kinds of things, you have to take that into consideration, and then you have to make your decision accordingly. Now, there is another option, okay? If all of that just gets you really tied up in a knot, you can always hand-bert the controls. You can fill out one of those, what's it called, Michael? Letter of direction?
Yeah, it's basically a power of attorney for him to control your account for
he can
a certain account.
He can execute the trades for you, okay? He's licensed to do that. So that's something to think about. If the whole thing, man, I'm tied up in a knot, I got 20 points, I don't know what to do, do I sell half, take it all, you know? He's been doing this for many years, okay? Trading people's accounts, managing, you know? So he has a real good feel for it. You can call him at 866-928-3310 if you have an interest in a managed account. Okay. In order to have a managed account based on the swing trader, then of course you have to be a CFRN partner, or you have to be a subscriber to the swing trader service. But you know, that's neither here nor there because we're still in the beta right now. Okay, so that's not even on the table. It's not available at this point. If you already have an account with Bert and you're already in the beta test, then you can talk to him about placing trades for you if you want. That's entirely between you and him. What I do want to show, we're 3 minutes past our mark here, but I just want to show really quick what everyone should have, everyone that's on the beta. Okay, let me see if I can move this.
You still got the charts back to show anything?
He does something.
I'll send him back to you.
I got him.
Okay.
Now, I'll give him back to you if you're going to hang around. Or are you taking off?
I got to do some things right away here.
Okay. All right. So then I just take him back.
So I'll be in and out, though, to answer questions.
Okay, guys. Here's the deal. If you are on the beta test and you did not get this email, this series of emails, some of you got it twice because you're already a partner and you went over and you signed up for the beta. We grandfathered all the partners into the beta and into the swing trader, all current partners, when we had the cutoff date. So you should have gotten, and I kept it in a log format, okay? So there was a running commentary that went through Friday and over the weekend. Okay, the original alert went out 10:47 a.m. And then there were some considerations for what would happen if the market did not immediately move higher on the open Sunday night. That was negated because, in fact, it did move higher. Okay. And then last night, we had an 18-point gap up on light volume. High of the session at the time was 76.25. If you're not already long, you know, wait for a pullback, not to chase it. Okay, and then there was a final one that came out when price was at 1180 that the final alert went out, Michael?
I think it might have even been a little higher than that.
Was it?
I know you had texted me saying you thought 1184 looked good, and I texted you back at like 3 o'clock in the morning saying it's at 1182 right now. I don't remember exactly what.
So the reason I showed you guys that is because if there's anyone who's on the beta and you did not receive the emails, you need to let me know. If you signed up for the Twitter feed and you didn't get approved yet, let me know. If you signed up for the Twitter feed and enabled your phone to receive it as a text message, let me know. I can't fix Twitter, but I can maybe help you figure out what you didn't do right. Did you ever get yours figured out, Michael?
I didn't. But to be honest, I haven't investigated it since we figured out that it didn't happen. Something I didn't do, I'm sure. So once I figure out what I didn't do, then I'll be able to share that with everyone.
Okay. All right, does anybody have any questions on anything that we have covered so far this morning? If not, we will pause for a brief station identification, and we'll go to Mr. David Williams, who is standing by at pagetrader.com. Anything?
Nope.
Anybody?
Nothing's coming in.
All right.
I think we're good.
Let's tell them who we are.
All right.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, Wayne.
David Williams. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I couldn't wait. Well, there we are, Dwayne. How are you?
Season's greetings.
And good morning, Michael.
Good morning, David.
Well, I'm here to report about Thanksgiving real briefly.
Very good. How was the backyard?
The backyard was very nice. I had a wonderful time. I'm sure a lot of other people did. And according to the financial reports, a lot of people felt very good about Thanksgiving and went out and shopped real heavy. And the numbers were particularly good for retail sales. That's a sigh of relief for a lot of people. And, you know, I'll tell you, here in Las Vegas, where we were hit very hard with the housing decline, I'm not sure where we stand in the whole nation, but, you know, we've got a lot of properties in foreclosure, and everybody's house has been cut in half or more out here.
Yeah.
So In spite of that, we really had good retail sales here in Nevada as well. The stores were just packed to the gills, you know, on Friday itself, Black Friday. Why do they call it Black Friday? Sounds ominous. Do you not have any reason why that is?
Yeah, David, but I can't remember.
Okay. That's right. That's a good enough answer. Yeah, I know the reason. I just don't remember.
I looked it up one year because, and it, let's see.
It sounds like something bad would be happening. Black Friday, like a market crash or something like that.
Black Friday.
Either way.
September 24th, 1869. Wait, that's not right. That's some other kind of Black Friday.
Yeah. Well, it's all right. Anyway, so a Black Friday, we had huge shopping.
I'd really like to tell you.
Okay, go ahead.
The day's name originated in Philadelphia, where it originally was used to describe the heavy and disruptive pedestrian and vehicle traffic which would occur on the day after Thanksgiving. Use of the term started before 1966 and began to see broader use outside Philadelphia around 1975. Later, an alternative explanation began to be offered, and this is the one I remember, that Black Friday indicates the point at which most retailers begin to turn a profit or are in the black.
Ah, there you go. That's a great explanation. It sounds ominous, but it really means a good thing. There you are. Well, anyway, so we had a good one, and then Saturday was very busy as well.
The studio audience is a little sluggish today.
Yeah.
The tryptophan's still kicking in.
Anyway, so, and how about in Arizona? Did you do any shopping, Dwayne?
You know, David, I did not.
Okay.
No, wait, I take that back. I did. Today's my wife's birthday. Honey, if you're listening, happy birthday. So I can't talk about what shopping I did, but it was like Friday afternoon. I didn't get up early and go trample people at Walmart or get pepper sprayed by a Walmart employee. Or no, it wasn't a Walmart employee. It was another Walmart
shopper. No, it was a customer.
Shopper. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I've never done that. I've never, ever done that. Now, Walmart was open Thanksgiving Day. I did go to get our little girl a bicycle, but they hadn't gone on sale yet. That didn't kick in until like midnight. So pretty soon, it'll be like 4th of July, they kick off these sales. But because it was, you know, always Black Friday. And then some of them started doing 3 a.m. And now this year, Walmart did midnight. Plus, they were open all day on Thanksgiving Day. But the bicycle didn't get cut in half until midnight. And I was in bed. So, but we'll find that bicycle. We'll find it.
Oh. Well.
Did you do any shopping?
Michael? No, I actually did do some shopping, and some Christmas shopping as well, and some shopping for myself to keep myself in those high-priced duds you see me in, you know, from time to time. No, Michael, how was yours?
Thanksgiving was all right. We, you know, we went out for Thanksgiving rather than having it at our home like we usually do.
Oh.
And it was nice to not have to clean anything up and actually to have so many options.
Yeah, the majesty of rental. You rented a Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we went to. I mean, I'm sure you, everyone or most everyone has probably been to a Thanksgiving buffet, and they had everything from swordfish to, you know, sirloin and ham, and turkey, and everything.
It was. Well, that's great.
My mom went to a Thanksgiving buffet this year in Georgia.
What did she think?
She's been eating at that place for years. You know, the last, I don't know when the last time is that she actually cooked the big Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, she used to, of course, when we were growing up. But, you know, now she just kind of likes going there and it's all ready and somebody does the dishes. And, yeah, for her it was good. It's up in the, she was up visiting some family in the mountains. And so this place, it's just a little buffet, a little family-run place called Daniel's. But it has this most majestic view overlooking the North Georgia mountains. It's just gorgeous, yeah.
Nice, very nice.
Very nice.
$10 plate of turkey, $1 million view.
Well, there you are.
Well, so that's nice to hear. And I hope the listeners as well had a really wonderful weekend. It's unusual, you know, for people who are watching markets every day and, you know, like the listeners that we have, you know, all of us have on this program, for ourselves who are in front of the markets every day and intensely trying to work with them and, you know, produce profit, manage risk, all that stuff. To have 2 days off during the week is unusual because you just don't get that very often. And we have another one coming up with Christmas where there's going to be 8 to 10 days off or some period of time, whatever it is.
What day does Christmas fall on?
What's that?
What day does Christmas fall on? I know it's the 25th, but...
The 8th falls on a Sunday.
Oh, see, that's kind of good for those people who like to work and like, you know, to be active in the markets. Because your travel day is Friday, and you got Christmas Eve on a Saturday, you got Christmas Day on a Sunday. You know, you don't expect everybody to be back to work Monday, but because it falls on a weekend, you'll have some fair to middling activity that week between Christmas, and it's not like getting chopped up on a Wednesday where you just lose everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there may or may not be, you know, at the end of the year, the markets, a lot of traders, a lot of people in other industries as well, do take extended vacations, whatever that extension is. It might be that they take off the whole last week. You know, they say, okay, we're done on the 25th and we come back on, you know, the 1st or whatever next year, something like that. But it does leave, the way that this holiday falls, it does leave the previous week, the week of the 19th, open for trading. 19th, 20th, 21st, 22nd, 23rd, et cetera. The possibility that 23rd is a, you know, that's a travel day, like you said. We may end up doing, you know, up to the 23rd, maybe up to the 22nd, something like that. But that does leave that final week of the year in position for some trading. And I wouldn't be surprised if the markets are pretty quiet that week, though. Just want to mention it now because it's likely that you're not going to see a lot of really big moves. Sometimes they happen, but I think it's likely that you're going to see low volume, an initial move, and a lot of low volume trading.
Yeah, you know, Friday was kind of a good example of what you're talking about, although actually Friday was more robust than most because on Friday on our 10K chart, we had a long at 65 that ran up to 1171. Mm-hmm. And then headed into the close, and the markets did close early, we had a short at 1162, and we ended up closing the day down around, gosh, that thing dropped 10 points. I mean,
yeah, so, and the 48 level, just for your information, that they touched down on for our institutional traders, we had given out 48 as the potential for the final bottom for this decline. Based on the inversion of the roadmap, as you recall, that we had actually called for the 21st, et cetera, and it inverted and went down. And so our final price target was 48, and they either came very close to that or went slightly below it. I don't have it right in front of me at this minute.
They actually, David, on the Globex session, which, remember, I told all you guys that on Thursday afternoon, you know, as you're stuffing turkey, the markets would open, and they did. For the Thursday session, and which led into Friday morning, which it was actually Friday session, but it opened Thursday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And on the Globex, they got all the way down to 47.50.
47.50, and then that's ticks, where two ticks I'm pasture, bringing it up right now.
Two ticks pasture 48, and then they came almost all the way back to it, full circle, at the close on Friday. They got down to 11:49 and a quarter. So, I mean, they hit the 48 for sure during Friday session.
Yeah, that's so the Globex. Right. I got it in front of me. So the Globex session is the one that actually did the number. The one that's printed is the Friday where it was a day session, but abbreviated or whatever. So down to 49.25. Is that right?
That was a great call. Yeah, down to 40. Well, I mean, the 40.
Yeah,
hit it twice.
This is
When they invert, one of the things we've talked about this so many times, every one of these setups for roadmaps should be traded as if they're going to invert. And that means that if the market subsequently breaks a level, let's say you're looking for a bottom and it starts to go up and then subsequently they start coming down and they either stop you out of your trade, this is one of the few occasions that I'm very comfortable doing a stop and reverse position. And when I say very comfortable, I really don't mean that I'm sitting back relaxed and I'm very comfortable, because anytime you get stopped out and reverse your position, psychologically, it's a very, it's a bump in the road, and for many people, it's very uncomfortable. And for me, to be honest, it is uncomfortable to do that, because you just took a position off either at a break even or a small loss if you managed your position correctly and got in correctly, et cetera. And then now you are selling a short, as an example, going in the opposite direction. And the move that you're expecting, again, you're in the point theoretically that the market should continue down the total amount of points minimum, which was 36 on the downside. And you're doing so based on the idea that an inversion has occurred. Most inversions are the easiest trades you'll ever actually be in, but you have to actually get in them. And it can be difficult. It can be hard to do that. I did not trade this one down because I could not identify easily until after the fact, and there still was some room on the table after the fact, that 99, the Globex test of 99, was where they inverted. It did not look normal to me. That did not look like an inversion. But it turns out that was, and the market did go much substantially lower. So anyway, utilizing that information, you know, now that we knew that, that meant that a very high probability, none of this stuff is 100% certain, but a very high probability existed that the market would reverse at 48. And Michael Z, who's going to be here most likely next Monday here, he was one of the guys that's in our institutional list, and he got that information as well. That's one of the reasons we only give it out to the institutional people, is because it's more general in nature. It's not quite as specific as an actual trade, but it is information that we believe, based on the inversion, based on the roadmap and what they've done, that there would at the very least be a bounce up to, in this particular case, 84 off of any reversal that happens at or near 48. And so we certainly did that today, and we've gone higher in the panel today. We have 96 as the highest level for today. They could go higher today. It certainly is possible, but they're reacting off of that level now, and we're still watching to see. I would rather be, to be honest with you, I'd rather be on the long side of this market. This is just me, and everybody's different in their setups and trades. I would rather be on the long side than on the short side for a little while longer today before I would change that and then rather be on the short side. I think that it's likely that we're going to see a continued advance, and we'll report the next turning point top that would be due this week, and then that will be really the more important short for a multi-day decline off of this bounce. But this has been a very powerful bounce. News-wise, fundamentally, what people would be saying this is caused by likely is the good sales numbers from Thanksgiving. And when people spend money, that means that people are, you have to infer from that people are feeling more comfortable about something. And I'm not sure that people are feeling more comfortable about the economy. I think people, because there's no good news. You know, we sold out of good news about a year and a half back. So we're just out of good news. But Thanksgiving, for whatever reason, it would be interesting to know from people what made the spending bigger than usual. But it was, and so the market apparently is reacting off of that news. I don't know if there's any other news other than that was good news, Dwayne. Do you?
Nothing of any real significance. I mean, on Friday, the reason if I'm going to attach a reason why our trade didn't get triggered in on Friday and didn't trigger until the Globex opened Sunday night was because, was it Portugal that got downgraded?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, Fitch downgraded them on Friday. So the market was trying to rally, and then that came out and kind of whacked it. So there wasn't really any good news at all on Friday. The good news was, like you said, the retail sales. those were just a real surprise. And I think it might be, you know, and this is just talk, but people are like so depressed, repressed,
right,
whatever. I mean, because there's so much bad news. Like, if they had one piece of plastic, you know, in their pocket, they just said, you know what, I'm going to go get my shopping on. You know, they're coming to take my house. They're going to take my car. They're going to take the wife, take the kids. They're going to take it all anyway.
Aww.
So let me go out, you know, let me go out in a blaze of glory. It's not like suddenly everybody got a job and everybody had cash money to go to the mall and buy stuff.
No,
what concerns me. Yeah, the retailers, they've got some money in their pocket now. But where did that money come from? Okay, it's kind of like if you go out to dinner on a credit card, okay, and you're feeling like the Mr. Big Spender, and you decide to, you know, you'll flip the waitress $100. Okay.
Wow.
You know,
that's a pretty good tip.
Well, that, you know, some people do that. So you flip the waitress $100, and it's on your Visa card, and maybe you're only making the minimum payment every month on your Visa card. And you know that's not smart. You know you shouldn't do that, but you've got yourself into a situation, and so that's what you're doing. And then eventually you default or whatever, and you can't pay it, and they cancel your card, and they make a mark on your credit, you know, blah, blah. Right? Who actually tipped that waitress $100? And so that leads to my next question, is who actually spent that money at the mall on Black Friday?
Okay.
Was it consumers? Was it banks? Was it lenders? Was it our...
Well, who's going to get stuck with the burning match?
Yeah. Was it our future Chinese overlords that were actually at the mall spending money on Black Friday? I mean, so yes, the markets took it as a, you know, as a good sign, and the markets rallied today, and I'm happy for that. Actually, the new home sales that came out today were a little better than expected, right, Michael? He's gone. But that's typically not enough to move, you know, what little green tick that made. It's not typically a market mover. So yeah, you got to hang this thing on the Black Friday. Other thing that's interesting is the European Union, they can't print money. Okay, the UK can print money. The difference between Sweden and Finland is one can print money, the other can't, because one's part of the EU, the other's not. Now, as we know, the Fed here in the US, we have no problem printing money. And so there's even talk now that the Fed may become the benefactor and may in fact move to bail out the European Union by printing a ton of money, further enslaving the American people.
Yeah, that would be a tragedy.
It would be a tragedy.
I sincerely hope that doesn't happen. Somebody needs to stop that from happening.
It would be a tragedy, but initially I think the markets would probably, you know, run up on it, you know.
Yeah. I'm not so sure the markets have, you know, been doing a good job of forecasting the future, because they've been pretty strong throughout the entire time that we've been going through this. A good portion of it since the last major low at 666, they have been going up with a lot of the bad news, and you know, things have continued to get worse. So the markets going up on it won't necessarily mean good things, except that the market is bullish for whatever its reasons are, but. Yeah, that would be really unfortunate if we do another bailout of yet again another whole country, or a, you know, because that's certainly going to cost everybody here dearly. We're already in it deep right now, and it doesn't affect necessarily people today. You know, the fact that we have a $15 trillion debt, that doesn't necessarily mean, other than the current economic times that we're in right now that you have to live with, et cetera, but the payment for whatever decisions are made to cut and the payment to pay off that debt really are going to come in the form of higher taxes. That's where they're coming from. And the government doesn't really have an income stream outside of taxes. So they're going to have to pay that off, and we're all going to pay it. So, you know, it's unfortunate. But if we go in and do another thing where we're bailing out now another country, God knows what the price tag on that is going to be.
It's not just one country. It's a
consortium of countries that have gotten themselves in trouble. And by the way, they got themselves in trouble by having the kinds of policies. I mean, take it for what it's worth.
the kinds of policies that this very administration admires. That's the kind of policies those countries that we now have to go bail out have. He's very fond of European-style taxation and spending. That's no lie. That's a fact. He's come right out and said it. You know, what's the tax plan where you tax everything in the manufacturing process, cap and trade type of taxing? I think that's the name of it. I can't remember it. Where a manufacturer is taxed a new tax along the way while he's manufacturing something. That's purely European. All of the entitlement programs that that now have crashed and burned their government, they had a great old time. They really did. You know, paying people for 15 months worth of work, but they only work 12 months. Giving people extended long vacation time, extended, health benefits and entitlement programs and on and on and on. And finally, the bill finally came due for a number of these European countries. And for us to now go in and bail them out would seem completely an inoperable thing to do. And you have to remember that I'm sure the argument's going to be if they do that, well, this is going to help America. But I've been hearing this is going to help America for $7 trillion now, because we were at $7 or $8 trillion when this administration started. We were already, you know, had a pretty good debt at that time. But we have now added $7 to $8 trillion since that time. Now, actually, in this administration, we've actually added about $4.4 trillion in new debt from this administration. But I've said this before, had there been no resistance to this current administration's ideas about what would help the economy or their ideas about what programs they should enact, we would have spent easily, if there had been no resistance from Republicans or independents against that, if there had been no Tea Party, etc., we would have had another $2 trillion easily that would have been spent already on new sort of experiments on how to fix this or new programs to make another group happy because they're getting a government handout. If you give out enough government handouts to people, you'll actually have a voting base at some point. You'll have enough people on welfare, enough people on unemployment, enough people on food stamps, enough people on whatever other entitlement programs there are. And trust me, there's more than any of you combined know about. That's all of us. That's me, Dwayne, Michael, and all of the listeners combined. If you really were to investigate, you would find that there were what could be classified as entitlement programs beyond your wildest dreams that this government is just wasting money on. And all of that would have been put into play, more of that would have been put into play if this administration had had their way. So it'd be really an ironic thing that we would then turn around and help a country who, you know, did essentially what our administration is trying to do. It crashed and burned. You know, here's the simple fact. If you spend a dollar, you're out a dollar. That's the simple fact this government doesn't understand. If you borrow a dollar, you owe a dollar. Those two facts do not make sense to this government. They just don't get that. To them, if you spend a dollar, now somebody owes you that dollar, meaning owes the government that dollar. They don't seem to think that they've spent it. They just know that they're owed it, and they come to us for it. It doesn't bother them. I think there's something wrong with the whole idea of all of us, meaning Americans, sending all of our money to one centralized location where a bunch of people in suits and ties who didn't earn that money, have no real respect for that money, just go spend it on whatever the heck they want to do. I understand how the system works, and I know the three levels of government, the checks and balances, and the fact that we have different parties, and it's a very, very good attempt to make things right. But you know, we've gotten ourselves into a position where, just like Europe and Greece, no one wants to take any of the hit. No one wants to take any of the pain. Nobody's willing to have a little bit taken from them because, you know, they've been spending like drunk sailors. Well, we're going to be in that same position here as well, and we're all going to have to face, at some point, I mean, the truth is, we're all going to have to face higher taxes. And I don't know about you, but I think when you, you know, take 50% of what somebody earns, you're crossing over a pretty important barrier, maybe ethically, but not necessarily for a government that just loves to spend. And I think we're going to all see that here, you know, sooner rather than later, because this money has to be paid back.
I saw a chart over the weekend. I should have hash marked it somehow so I could blog it. But anyway, America, based on the way this guy ran his numbers and did his chart, owes like $1.10 for every dollar we're making, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Compared to some of these European countries that owe like $6 for every dollar they're making.
Right.
And so the whole point of his article was that, well, at least it's the old, well, at least I'm not as bad as that guy, you know.
Right. It doesn't horrible, mean, though, but here's there's some interesting dynamics here. Each one of these countries has a different dynamic, and a $6 dynamic that they spent there that finally caught up with them and crashed and burned, it doesn't mean that we have $5 worth of that to go before we do exactly what they did. We might crash and burn it, too. Because we have a very different dynamic going on here.
Oh yeah,
in America.
I mean,
don't kid yourself thinking, well, we have $5 to go, and that's an idiotic way to think. If somebody's writing an article saying, well, you know, we still have $5 to go, maybe we don't.
That wasn't the point of his article. The point of his article was simply that we aren't as bad off as they are. That was his point.
My point is that we may be $1 off from being as bad as they are. Even though it looks like they had, you know, they have a $5 leeway before we would get there, we may crash and burn at two. In other words, we spend $2 for taking in one. We're already at the point, and that's essentially the same argument, that the gross national product of this country cannot pay off our debt. We are spending more than we produce the entire gross national product. Every package of cigarettes, every piece of gum, every tractor, every car, all of that money. That's not right. And you'll notice it's funny when you think about this and look at it. This goes across all administrations. How come there's not some rule, just like there is a rule for us, you can't spend more than you have? How come the government doesn't have that rule? How come it isn't a law that the government has to stay and live within their means? Their means meaning our money. Because when they don't live within their means, they end up spending enormous sums more than they take in, and then they come to us for that money. So shouldn't it be a law that they can't just continuously, while we're all working away, they just can't keep enacting programs, whatever kinds of programs, that just spend more and more money and then turn around and say, well, you know, y'all have to pay your fair share now because we spent all this. There should be a law that says you're only allowed to spend with the exception of extraordinary circumstances, war, this, that, the other, and you can list those out. And, of course, there'll be loopholes in that as well. But at least should there not be a law that the government, you would think, wouldn't you, at this point, you would think that we would have some system where the government has to live within its means? It can't just go hog wild and then turn to all of the people and just say, well, now, you know, look, you know, you owe this money. You got to pay your fair share. But, no, we don't have that. And that's called a balanced budget amendment. And who do you think doesn't want a balanced budget amendment? Just take a guess at which side of the aisle doesn't want that, feels that it's an imposition on them and what they want to do. I'll give you a guess. It's not the Republicans. It's the people who want to spend and tax. It's the other side of the aisle. And it's not even the middle-of-the-road Democrats, because there's a whole bunch of really reasonable people middle of the road. It's the left. It's the far left that wants to do that. They don't like the balanced budget amendment. That's like, you know, that's evil to them for whatever reason. You can plug in the reason. But the fact is that they don't want it. And we haven't had it. And it's shocking to me across all administrations that we don't have something that limits the government to a form of living within its means. And we don't have that right now. All we have right now is, you know, while you're working hard every day, the government's coming up with new ways to spend and spend and spend. And before you know it, you know, your tax bill keeps going higher and higher until you have a Greece. And people keep coming in saying, well, you know, poor little people over here, we need this, and well, we need this. And we've got 15 different programs of every kind, redundancy all over the place. You know, if you go in there and say, well, these people need a program to do this, fine, here's your program. But you go to look at the government, and there's 15 of those programs, and they're all redundant except for one or two of them. So you're just, you know, the list goes on and on. It's just, it's mind-boggling. So I'm hoping that whoever does get into office, whether he's Democrat or Republican, has some common sense and understands that the concept of spending a dollar, being owed a dollar, or owing a dollar, understands those three things, because this government doesn't seem to get it. Because we're spending something like $9 billion a day or a week or something on interest alone. And, you know, it's just getting silly. I realize, too, that, you know, we're at war. We've been through a number of wars that are, you know, for many people are highly questionable, et cetera, et cetera. But the fact is we need a military, and we're going to have to pay for that military one way or the other. And I know war is very expensive. But, good Lord, I would much rather spend, if I had to, this is just me, if I have to support the troops in a war, and whether, you know, maybe it's questionable. I don't know how many wars there are that aren't questionable, to be honest with you. But I'd rather spend it on something real like that than some just pipe dream thing that, you know, some new program that gives unearned benefits to people. Because America didn't, I've said this so many times, we didn't get here on the unearned benefits program. That's not how America got to be great. It got here on the earned benefits program. And it used to be common sense that if you didn't go out and work, you didn't eat. That used to be common sense. Now, it's practically politically incorrect to, and it's been that way for quite a while. You know, that's, we got here on a completely different program, and, you know, things change over time, et cetera, and America's going to have to go through its whole, you know, cycle like the markets do, et cetera. But I would, you know, if I were you guys, I'd keep a little money in cash under the pillow, just in case.
What he said. What he said.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm gonna tell you, and here's something else. Since you brought that up, on the morning of 9, I'm not gonna do the full blown story. I'm just gonna give you a little synopsis. On the morning of 9/11, I had 50 employees waiting for me in the basement. And I went to my safe deposit box because I knew there were going to be families that needed to eat, and we didn't know what tomorrow would bring. And couldn't get in. Couldn't get in the bank. And I was good friends with the branch manager. And I was pleading with him at the door, and he's like, Dwayne, we're in lockdown. Computers are down. The doors are locked. You know, I was literally pounding on the doors with both fists, and he finally just shook his head and said, Dwayne, I'm so sorry. And he turned, and I remember him walking off into darkness because the lights were out in the building, because they literally were in lockdown. And I was like, man, I got money inside of that bank, and I can't get to it. Mm-hmm. So, take it for what it's worth, guys. Whatever you can and however you do it. Well, yeah, but what happens if it gets stolen or somebody finds it or moths come in and eat it up? You know, you got to work that out for yourself.
By the way, I just want to interject this. Nobody is trying to get a run on banks, or nobody's trying to, frighten people into doing anything.
No.
We're just saying as a general financial principle, it's probably a good idea to have some cash available, especially given the uncertainty that some of the banks that we have here have connections to other areas of the world. We don't know how leveraged they are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so if something does go wrong in these other countries, it could affect your bank in some way. It doesn't mean that you want to take all your money out or do anything. You can do whatever you want. I think it's just a good general idea to have some cash on hand as well. And, yeah, you will have to protect it and hide it in such a way that it's not something that can just be readily found in your home or something like that. You can work that out. You guys are clever enough to trade the markets. Well, you're clever enough to hide a little money. Think of yourself like David Copperfield when you have that little stack of cash and just find a place to put it. There are places to put it where it won't just be easily found. But I like the idea of doing that because it's a form of risk management. You know, maybe, you know, in a crash and burn scenario where everything just blows up and it's all just over, and you know, and maybe cash isn't even worth anything. You guys might remember the Twilight Zone from many, many years ago. That for those of you old enough to know about this Twilight Zone, where these thieves several men and a woman, they all get together and they, or several men get together and they rob Fort Knox, and they took all the gold. They took a lot of gold, and somehow they pulled off the whole thing, and they managed to get that gold. And by the way, gold is metal. It's not light. It's not easy to transport. And they got it all the way over to a hidden base in a mountain. And so they put all the gold in there, and they had special machines. Their idea was, is we're going to be hiding in this mountain, and these machines are going to put us to sleep for 100 years, and their bodies are going to get fed, and they'll sleep for 100 years. And then when they wake up, it'll be 100 years later. They'll be very rich men, and they'll be able to walk the earth and live a very high lifestyle. And so they pulled off the heist. They put all the gold into the cave. They had their machines ready there, and they went to sleep, and they woke up 100 years later. Everything worked fine. They were probably a little groggy, but they got up and walked around, and they cheered themselves and said, what an amazing thing. Here we are. It's 100 years later. So they start taking their gold, and their truck doesn't work. One thing they forgot is their own vehicle wouldn't work anymore because it was 100 years old. So they had to drag that gold with them on the highway. They were trying to hitch a ride. And, of course, cars were very much advanced and stuff like that. And along the way, of course, human nature takes over, and one of the guys gets angry at the other one, and he shoots him, and he takes his gold, and now he's got more gold to be carrying along the way. And one by one, they end up getting in fights over the gold because they're hot and they're tired. And finally, there's the last man standing with whatever gold he's able to carry now, because he can't carry all that gold. He's had to just leave some behind, but he still has some. And finally, he's hitching a ride, and car pulls up, and the people look at him, and he's completely wiped out. You know, he's been walking for miles in the desert. And he says, I just want to, you know, get this gold. They say, what do you got in that bag? What are you pulling there? And he says, well, it's gold. It's gold. And he wants to get a ride from them, and I think as the story ends, he gets in the car and he drives off. But before he does, they said, well, you don't have to carry that gold. That stuff is worthless. You know, it's tin. It's nothing. You know, it was completely outlawed. We don't even use gold anymore, or whatever. Gold had completely lost its value. So they had this whole big plan, and 100 years later, and for whatever reason, gold had just turned into meaningless, you know, metal that meant nothing in that society 100 years later. That was a great Twilight Zone, and I'm only bringing it up because we could see something happen to the dollar, and there are people who believe that the dollar is not going to be our currency over some period of time. So if you take it out of the bank, you know, it's possible that later when you turn it in, you know, even if you left it in the bank, a dollar might be worth less or not worth anything at some point. But I think in terms of risk management, I think it's a good idea to have some cash hidden away, just like we're talking about, just somewhere so that you have something there if the whole system were just to blow up in a, you know, fiery explosion and suddenly somehow all the money wasn't worth what it was or banks went out of business or whatever. We're not threatening or saying that a bank is going to do that. The government, you know, there is insurance on your accounts, et cetera, et cetera. The insurance is, I think, $250 on regular banks right now, $250,000 on FDIC-insured accounts. If you are at a credit union, you want to check what their insurance is as well, because it may be different. And you certainly want to know that effectively there really isn't much insurance for brokerage accounts. But the exchanges are probably going to make up the difference for the people. I'm one of them who are involved in, because I had a brokerage account, one amongst many, but one over at Lynn Waldock where MF Global was. And there wasn't a lot of money over there, but that money has to be made up by someone. Otherwise, it'll need a bailout from the government. And if that doesn't happen, then all of the people like you and I would lose our faith in the exchanges. So I'm still curious why John Corzine, who apparently was running the ship and knew that, you know, started out at $600 million, now it's $1.2 billion, that they bet on, on the wrong side of bonds. And, you know, I'm wondering why he's still walking the streets and isn't charged with something yet.
I thought he resigned. At one point, they couldn't find him. I mean, I haven't really followed the story because I didn't have any personal business with them, so I haven't followed it real close. Is he still running the store over there?
No, he's out, okay. But as far as I know. But what I'm curious is that certainly you're not supposed to be taking customer-segregated funds and betting it on anything. That's not their money to place bets with. That's our money to place bets with, if you want to call it that. So,
no,
anyway,
I agree.
We'll see.
And I mean, I'm sure we haven't seen the end of this. I mean,
no.
Now, I'm trying to remember who had sent me an email. One of our partners had sent me an email, and in fact, I even posted it on the blog. I didn't put his name, of course, but the content of it. He saw this coming somehow. He liquidated all of his positions, but left his money in his account.
Mm-hmm.
And at last I heard from him, he couldn't get at his money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like he had a position, because a lot of people were caught in positions that they couldn't liquidate or get out of the position. But he had already gone flat and just had the money sitting
there. It's meaningless if you're flat or have a position. Either way, from my understanding is that, because we had no positions on when this happened as well.
Okay.
And I think the thing is that that money really just isn't there. It's an accounting entry, but I don't think the money was really there. Or if it was there, there was enough other money that wasn't there that when everyone wanted to get their money, there just wasn't enough to do it. It's interesting that it's not a big thing on the news yet, and I'll let you know when we get ours back.
Hey, one of I don't want to call his name right now. If it's okay to call your name, I will, but for privacy's sake, I won't. One of our members, Cliff, got 60% of his. He just said it's okay. He got 60% of his money back this weekend. The trustee right now has only. No, this is not from Cliff. This is from someone else. The trustee right now only has 55% to give back to the clients. This is the whisper on the streets. So, yeah, there's one of our guys who said he got 60% of his money back this weekend. So I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know how that works, how one person gets it back and maybe another. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know either. But good for Cliff.
Like
at least he got 60%.
Well, it would seem like if
60%
they had
return on your investment.
If they had 55 cents on the dollar to give back, you know, it would seem like the way they would do it would be to spread that across everybody, you know, and rather than trying to make, you know, some people whole or...
Right.
Waiting... Oh, he's waiting for the claim form from the trustee for the rest. So maybe, maybe your money's, you know, maybe it's coming, David. I mean, supposedly, the way this thing works is there's a fund, but it's such an enormous amount of money... I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see how it all ends up. If this guy doesn't end up going to jail, I'll be very surprised.
Well, I'm not sure how you can be running a company. Somebody placed those bets with customer segregated funds, period. That's what happened.
Well,
they bought bonds. They bought European bonds of some type. They bet on bonds.
Right. That's no secret. I'm saying I'd be very surprised if he doesn't go to jail for this.
Yeah. No, I know. There, it seems like that would be something that would not be a right thing to do. And since when are brokerages? Maybe I'm just naive. I didn't know that my brokerage might be placing really big bets. With what money? I don't know. But unless they're a customer of themselves using their own money, I certainly would not expect them to be using customer money.
You think they're just going to let that money sleep?
Money never sleeps.
Money never sleeps.
I learned that by going to the movies.
Unless you put it under your mattress. And then it does sleep. All the banks, you know, everybody. Well, and see, right now they're trying to get the Stengel Act back in so that banks going forward won't be able to use customer deposits to trade on behalf of themselves. But, yeah, right now if you've got X number of dollars in your account, they can – it's not literally like they're reaching into your account and taking your money out. But it's because they have, we'll just use a figure, they have $1 billion on deposit, and they've got, you know, 1 million traders, you know, trading. But at any given time, 50% of that money is not being used. How hard is it for them to leverage off those deposits to go somewhere and make some trades?
Sure.
Not hard at all.
Well, also, and just so people know this, and we'll get onto the markets here, but banks do repurchase agreements with money that's called repos on the overnight with funds that are in your account that aren't in treasury bills and stuff like that. And those are essentially, it's just a sweep where they sweep the money into essentially a an overnight T-bill kind of thing, and they get a money market return on it in the morning, and that's part of that's just how it goes. And they've been doing that forever. Banks are allowed to do all kinds of things with their money, but they're not allowed but to place an outright bet, a net long or net short bet on an instrument of some kind is a little bit different. It's quite a bit different. And that's what this brokerage did. So the money will have to be made up. Everybody will have to be made whole. Otherwise, there's going to be some question about the safety and security of people having money at brokerages. And I'm sure we wouldn't want that now, would we, Mr. and Mrs. Government? And so we'll see. You know, also, you know, in the old days, this is something that the government would have normally stepped up to assure people that these funds would be there. This administration is anti-Wall Street, anti-fat cat, anti—you know—whatever you want to call it, and they haven't stepped up. I've not heard anything about this government saying, our government saying, "Hey, for the people who lost X number of dollars potentially here, if that isn't made up, you know, we're gonna be good on that. We'll make it up." They're not. I don't see the bailout coming from the government on this. Because they're antagonistic towards business, they're antagonistic towards trading. They would love to be able to raise the rate on trading, you know, the in and out rate. You know, there would be an extra tax on that. There's been all kinds of stuff like that. There's two things they haven't been able to touch. One of which is the internet, which they wish they could get their greedy hands on, and tax that, which has not happened yet. And it would be the most unpopular thing they could possibly do. So they haven't touched it. But the other one also is that there's been some efforts over the last 6 years while I've been on this program for some people who are trying to pass a bill to increase again by quite a margin the amount that you pay to get in and out of trades. You remember that, Dwayne. And that has not passed either. So thankfully, those things have been left alone, and we'll see, you know, how it all plays out. But I think everybody will be made whole, including ourselves, with regard to this piece, because they have to. You know, they're just not going to be able to let people, unless some other huge tragedy comes along. I think they're, you know, it would undermine the confidence in the whole system. And so there you are. Dwayne, are you still with us, or is it my program now?
No, I'm right here, man.
Oh, okay.
I just don't have anything else to add on that topic.
Okay, well, good. That's a good way to do it. Just stay completely silent. Just go dead. No.
I'm letting you have your say.
I know. Okay, so listen, let's take a look at the S&P.
Okay.
We have a couple of interesting things happening today. Number one, although we didn't forecast it on the program, this is a bounce off of the 48 level that we talked about earlier, which was a result of an inversion, which normally happens about 20% of the time on roadmaps, which are types of forecasts that we give out for specific price movement in a specific direction. Although today has hit the 96 target, that is the final target for today in our support and resistance panel, I think it's likely that we're going to see higher prices, like a test or an attempt at 99. This isn't an outright forecast, but I'm just saying that we're going to be likely going higher and then this. And so I like the idea of looking for buying territory here, as I mentioned earlier, rather than shorting. And we did attempt to short this morning at 95 and a quarter or something, but we didn't get filled on that order and we took it off. And then later they did go up, they tested that level, and they have went down to this 90 to 92 level. Kind of quiet trading. This almost, other than the fact that we have a big opening today, today's intraday movement has kind of a holiday feel to it a little bit. Very, very quiet movement, very slow.
Well, that gap up last night, that was 18 points.
Yeah. No, there's no question about it. They rocketed it off that. And, you know, it's an important move, no doubt about it. They definitely have bounced hard. And, you know, I would have liked to have as well taken advantage of this. We gave the advice out. But in this particular case, this is, again, another overnight move where you have to be willing to understand that the Globex market can move to areas that might not be normally reached during the pit session. You're seeing somewhat less of that, but it still can be very volatile. And you can still be right about a position but have to sit through a lot. And so I have not been taking Globex positions, overnight positions. I will exit positions on the overnight if profit targets are reached. But I will not enter new positions because it is really wild, and you have to understand that there's going to be movement to areas that you might not normally see during the pit, and your move would still be correct. They can go to areas that would normally stop you out and then reverse and continue, and the original forecast in our particular case for a move up to 84 is, you know, would still happen. Now, as it turns out, the overnight actually made it very easy, but I'm just saying in general, you know, that's kind of a common thing that we see with the Globex overnight markets. So with that in mind, my biggest thing is to look for buying opportunities here into tomorrow, and then we'll be able to, if we do get higher, we do 99 and a little bit higher, then we'll be able to make a forecast for the next top, et cetera, and really maybe be able to take good advantage of that. The market has taken back in one day quite a bit of any of the short positions that got short, if not all, of from people getting short from the 21st on, for those people who were holding overnight positions. And this is why it's always important, you know, to place stops and to manage your position, stops for profit as well, not stops for just being stopped out, but stops to stop in and protect a profit in case something like this happens. This is, by gapping up and doing this, we are in a stronger position now. We're above, actually, in order to be in a strong position, the market would have to close hourly above 88, which we have done and will probably continue to do until the larger trend is over on the upside. So worst case, let me just add to that, worst case 86. So between 86 and 88, I would expect the market to continue hourly and daily closes above those levels, which would indicate higher prices. And then later we'd come back down, you know, and do our normal reversal. This is yin and yang at work in front of you. These are two universal forces playing out against each other in this particular arena, the market. It plays it out, itself out in relationships between you and your wife or you and your husband. It plays itself out in mechanical things, in the ways that the mechanics of the universe play, you know, just the interaction of mechanical things, the way your car, when it breaks down, all these different things. Everything has these forces at work. And at some point, one of these forces takes over the other, and for a period of time, it rules. And you can see it everywhere. It's not just in the markets. But the fact is that it is in the markets because it is a universal force. It's a force that's bigger than the markets themselves. The markets are really big, but these forces are prior to the market. They're there without a market needing to be there. The market simply is there, and it proves the existence in another format of that these forces are at work. Are these forces random? That's a question for someone else to answer.
We're going to get the answer to that next month.
We are going to get to that next month. I don't believe that the forces are random, and merely because you can't understand, you meaning anybody, can't necessarily understand the movement doesn't necessarily mean that they're random. It just means you may not understand what the market is doing. And then there are statistical ways, of course, to determine what they call randomness, and those statistical things you have to judge for yourself whether that is satisfactory to your liking, etc. I happen to believe that the markets have a nature, that there is something inherent in them that is something that could be called a nature, and that therefore you can make forecasts that would could be accurate. And we've, of course, have made more than 1,000 forecasts on this program that have been accurate over the years for various types of price movement, turning points, etc. And we'll see. I'm very curious because we're going to have a really interesting guest on, the fellow that wrote the book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street.
One of us should really remember his name.
Mikkel. I can't think of his last name.
I'll write it down.
But,
I'll find it and write it down. Yeah. He's going to be on the show.
If it wasn't such a random collection of letters, I would know a little better.
There was a research report that came out this weekend from some neuroscientists in Finland or Denmark or somewhere.
Yeah.
And based on their paper, what they're presenting, 53% of every clinical analysis you know, trial test. Like if you drop some kind of chemical on the mice, on the normal mice, and their nerves fire at this speed, and then you drop the drops on the mutant mice, their nerves fire at this speed, that because of the way it's, they've showed that in this study, in this report, this paper, they show that the way everything's been measured in the past, that there's a huge fault in the way modern science has accepted the measuring of the statistics. In other words, you know, 30%, to say that 30%, that like this has a 30% better rate than this, it really gets long, but it talks about how you have to start.
Yeah.
You have to run an additional test where you compare the difference to the difference. And mm-hmm. they say based, you know, we're not pointing fingers, but based on, at best, 53% of all scientific data out there is flawed to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
So when you...
Yeah, and... go ahead.
That's about it.
No, that's a good point. And, you know, again, I want to just say this again, then we'll move on to markets again. I'm not sure that the markets aren't random. I'm just convinced in a general sense that there really is something else going on other than pure random behavior. And I feel as though I could prove that in a either scientific or close to scientific way by making a number of calls utilizing reflected wave and hourly roadmaps, daily roadmaps, that sort of thing, where we're making literally a number of forecasts within a single forecast. The market's going to bottom on such and such a date at such and such a price. It's going to move up 18 points initially. It's going to have a 6-point, you know, and then continue up another 36 points and have the market do that and finish on such and such a day. We've made those kinds of calls on this radio before that have worked, and that type of information would be very, very difficult to have in a random world, to be able to say that I just got lucky and did that. Having said that, I don't know. I really don't know, because statistics and the nature of things are bigger than I understand. So I'm willing to leave open to that, but I am interested and I'm excited to talk with Mikkel, the author of Random Walk Down Wall Street. And he certainly has had his share of critics and people who support his work. His book is very popular. It's in its X number of printing. I don't know how many printings it has. And either this is a brand new book or it's the same book with new bits and pieces added to it, where he maybe is proving even further what his point is. So we'll see. But I'm interested in having him on, Dwayne. And what date do we know what the date is for the listeners so they can know?
No, we don't. We don't have a firm date yet. His last communique was that he wanted the book to be on the shelves in bookstores when we had the conversation.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
So I haven't chased it any further than that, other than he has agreed to do it. So it's just a matter of letting it get on the shelf and then nailing down.
Yeah. Maybe we should check with the publisher, Random House. A little humor there. Your humor, actually.
My humor, yeah.
I thought that was funny. Okay, so with regard to where we are on the S&P, we've hit the 96 level. I do like the idea of higher prices are likely into tomorrow, and therefore I think we'll have a more of a forecast to put together tomorrow, other than the fact that I would like to be buying important pullbacks or roadmap type of setups if the market gives it to us on a pullback. Here for those of you that have reflected wave, and for those of you who are using whether it's your own buying signals or Dwayne's and Michael's, whatever, I like the idea of higher prices. They've already done our minimum target of 84 on the upside from 48, completed it completely on the overnight, so we'll see. In fact, what was the overnight? Well, today's low was 87, but the overnight
low was 69.25.
Well. Okay. So if you want, let's take a quick look at a couple other markets here. One of them, the really important market for the world right now is gold. And why is gold so important, Dwayne? Why don't you tell us what makes gold so important?
Well, there's a limited supply.
That's a big one.
When God created the heavens and the earth, he shut down production after day
seven. Isn't there a limited supply, though, of soybeans? Isn't there a limited supply of...
No, they plant a new crop every year.
Okay.
You can't plant a new crop of gold.
That's right.
All,
well said.
All that is in the belly of the earth, that's all there will ever be.
Okay. Continue on.
And, you know, anyone who's ever read a history book, it's always been used as a storehouse. Well, not always, but for as long as any of us can remember or read, it's been used as a storehouse of value. It's a stuff of kings and queens and, you know, golden goblets. And it's not a fiat currency. But in its own sense, it's the term fiat metal probably doesn't even make sense. But it has value only because man... Now, I'm not taking away the fact that it's written about in the Bible. It is. It's written, you know, the gold of kings and blah, blah, and the gold, David's goblet. But my point is, it only has value. Anything in the world only has value because a certain number of people, I don't want to use consortium, a consensus of people have agreed that we're going to consider this valuable because. And... You know, whether it's coconut shells or clam shells or gold, that's why it has value. It has value because a bunch of people agreed that it has value. And there, and beyond that, you know, it yeah, it has some applications in electronics, and it looks pretty as jewelry. But other than that, there is no reason.
Well, I think that's plenty of reason right there.
If you're in a if you're in the midst of a famine and you have a basement full of gold, but there's no soybeans in the field and no pure water to drink, you will die atop your heap of gold. So
that's right. I think people view gold as the final basic wealth, the basic measure of wealth. If you have no paper money, if you have this, that piece of metal is going to be valued by others as the final currency.
I agree.
As much of a trouble as it is to carry it around, that's what it's going to be considered as. So it has that value, and over time, it has maintained that value. We're not on a gold standard. Our financial system is not on a gold standard, and what that means is that for every dollar that's out there, we don't have a bar of gold sitting somewhere to back it. Why would you want something to back it? Because we want to know our paper money has some real value, that it's not just a printed piece of paper. Well, we're not on the gold standard. We're on a completely different kind of standard, and it has nothing to do with gold. But people still do intuitively sense that gold or value gold as the bottom line. And so it has a very powerful part of our view of the world economy, our own economy, et cetera. And so owning gold, you know, these cycles are huge in gold. That you could literally live a lifetime. You could start accumulating gold when you're, say, 30 years old, and you could be dead and buried before gold rallies again. It might take 30 to 40 years. It can really go long, long periods of time with its value. And actually, in many ways, that's a good thing, because that means that other economic factors are balanced and working to some degree well, because gold usually rallies, at least historically, and it can change in the future, but it's going to rally when bad stuff's happening, when people start, you know, wanting it out of lack in other areas where the economy is crashing, et cetera, that sort of thing. So we're still bullish on gold overall. We, meaning ourselves, we're still in a two-year gold position that we're holding, that we've sent our statements to Dwayne and shown him. And we've taken some of it off, but in small amounts, 5 and 7% here and there. But we're going to continue holding it. And this is only interesting if you happen to be in gold, but I'll let you know when we are taking stuff off. And I did let people know that we did take some off. We haven't taken... on the weekly top that we had called a few weeks back in gold, this was the top for November 14th, and it came 1 week early, and the market turned and went down, which is what it should have done. We booked some, about 5% of our position there. And the market still is in a strong position as far as we're concerned right now. So cycles are so big that I don't have enough data to really build a chart that would consist of much longer term bars. And so we're trading it off of the trend. We're basically trend following with gold. And it can take some time. I know a lot of people who have tried to trade gold intraday, and you can do it. And there are some really nice success stories in that. But there's also very large swings that can occur even while it's still inside the longer term trend. It hasn't broken anything important, but you could have, it could have broken your bank if you were not trading it properly or trading with a stop, etc. And that kind of thing happens with these markets that can make these huge moves because they've accumulated so much time. Their cycles are just so big. You know, that's essentially what it is. So there you are. Now, as to whether or not we have a position, something to do with gold right now, I do see something coming up December 1st, December 2nd, which is a date that's important for several markets. So I like the idea of us trading either into that date on the long side or just waiting for that date, and we'll put together a roadmap trade based on that. One last thing I'd like to say about gold is we're kind of in a position right now, not in a position in the market, but that the gold market itself is in a somewhat unusual position in as much as it is trading above $1,645 and continues to. Now, why is that important? Why would $1,645 be an important level for gold? Well, it happens to be important because that level, we are in a time period in the end of 2011 here where that level becomes active. That means that that number is actually one that under certain conditions would be hit by traders trading gold. And so you can see recently we went down to 1667, nowhere near there. But I'm mentioning this because with the market staying strong right now and staying well above that level, that's another early indication for very bullish behavior in gold, that gold, in fact, is being buoyed up by buying pressure. So I like what I'm seeing if somebody were to ask me that. However, I would want to also say that from this point forward, any daily close below something like maybe $1,675 or so, that would, especially if it occurred in the next day or so, that's not a forecast for that to occur, but if it did occur, I would actually be interested in shorting the market for then a test or an attempt at 1,645. So now, over in a day or so, that 1,645 is going to become invalid. That's why I'm saying in a day or so if this were to happen, because the time period for that price to be active is going to go away or have been passed through, and that would leave the market in a very bullish position. So that's why I'm bullish on gold right now. I hope that makes some sense, but that's the general picture. Let's see if there's anything else with gold. The weekly top that came in, then we sold off from that that we talked about just a minute ago, the week of November 14th, which came 1 week early on the 7th. And we'll move on. Let's go on to another market, and we'll take a look and see if there's anything else interesting.
You want to look at the euro?
Yeah, the euro is another market. We've had a very nice downtrend in euro here all the way back from October 27th. There's a lot going on news-wise, fundamentally, in this market, which ties in with the technicals as well. And we're very close to an important signal, I believe, in this market as well. We haven't given out very many roadmaps in these markets recently because some of them have not been as clear as I like to see them, and I would rather give out something that's really clear. And you go through periods where sometimes you just get a whole row of them, which we had even this year. Back in this year in February and March all the way through June, we gave out a whole slew of roadmaps of different time frames for specific price movement, and virtually all of them ran to distant targets that were forecast for them. At this point in time, partially with the volatility, and I love the volatility, but partially because of it, it leaves the market in a position where I'm not as comfortable giving them out. We may end up giving them to our subscribers. We may end up giving them, and we have on some occasions, given them to our institutional people. But for giving them out to just ordinary people and saying, this is what we think you should do, I want to have a greater certainty than I do. Now, having said all that, the euro is in an interesting position because we're starting to get the early signs for an advance to into the week of December 12th. And I've mentioned on the program before that the week of December 12th is very important for the euro as a turning point, ordinarily as a top, and that's why where we are right now is critical, because if it's going to give us that and a powerful reversal off of that top, we would be beginning that advance at or near the levels that we're at right now in terms of price, meaning levels, and then also where we are now in time, because the week of December 12th is really just 2 weeks away. So what we would be looking for if we get further confirmation, so understand that I'm not directly forecasting this yet, but that this is, I'm giving this idea out for people to watch their own work, that 136.70 would be an important upside target. We're at 133. That's a 300 plus pip move. If we were to take a position right here and now, I'm going to wait. We're not in it. We're flat. So in spite of the fact that I'm, you know, putting this out, I want people to understand that we're waiting for a little more confirmation. I very much prefer getting in later and having much greater confirmation and really getting the easier part of the move than I do in fighting with it as it's trying to confirm.
And now, say that again, the 300 pip move in which direction?
That would be up.
Okay.
But that would be, and that would be into the week of December 12th.
Okay.
Now, we're not quite there yet. This is early indication for this that we're giving out. So I haven't yet put this out to anybody yet. This is, your listeners are getting this the first. But we are going to put this out as we get a little further into the week and get a little better confirmation of what we think, you know, confirmation looks like, and be able to trade it with some reasonable risk control, et cetera, up to that. So that's a nice potential setup for the market. Now, if by chance the market really, you know, some bad news comes out, you know, that would mean lower prices, and that would end up pushing prices substantially lower. And so, and that's why I'm being careful here, and I want to give a signal later in the week for when we'll start taking long positions in this. So we've had a good, listen, we called for a weekly top, again, on the week of October 31st was the on-time week, and it came 1 week early on October 24th on your program for this market. And we've done a substantial move down, and there is a possibility for somewhat lower prices, but because the market is bouncing, as we can see in today's price movement, and because we're starting to inch closer to that important time period of the week of December 12th, this is a very interesting spot for this market where they're going to have to make a decision how they handle this juncture. And I want to be trading in the direction of that decision. And like I say, if we get that, if that does confirm, then we will advance up to 136.70 or higher into the week of December 12th, plus or minus 1 week. So that's a nice trade. That's something that we could really, all of us could do well on. And, you know, for those of you who are willing to, you know, have the larger margins, you have to check with your broker for that. Have a you know, the patience to be in it for a little time. You know, you might have to be in it for 2 weeks. This is the kind of trade, or even a day trader, but this is the kind of trade that somebody could really take a big chunk out in a single trade. And I like that. That's, you know, we do that a lot. Duane's newer product coming out is going to probably do something like that, trying to get a bigger chunk, because you can do, you can day trade, and you can also trade longer term, which I certainly do. I haven't done it in the S&P recently, but in other markets, you know, I'm not as worried about the Globex as I am in the S&P. So we'll see how this plays out. So the euro for me is the most interesting. We've been talking about the week of December 12th for a couple of weeks. I've been mentioning it, and this, the stuff is starting to line up here for us on that. So, Duane, we'll mention that again as we get a little closer during just as the week goes on here.
You know, there's been so much bad news out of the European Union, and there's so many clever men around the world working furiously, I'm sure, at some kind of solution, resolution, that, you know, that rally, whether it's based on something realistic, you know, I don't know that there's a, you know, what you could call a good old-fashioned, honest, realistic solution to their problems or ours when it comes to the economy. I mean, create jobs, sure, employ more people, right? I mean, but so far that hasn't been happening anywhere. You know, nobody's managed to pull that off. So other than moving some decimal points or shifting some stuff around or cooking the books, as they would say, in which, you know, somebody may come up with a very clever way to make this thing not look so bad, and so people get happy. And, you know, Black Friday is a great example. Bad news on top of bad news, the sky is falling, people are losing their jobs and their houses. If you haven't lost yours yet, just wait. You probably will before it's over. I mean, that's kind of been the tone of the news, but yet what happens? People go out and spend more money than they've ever spent before on Black Friday. Is that a sign of hope or desperation? I don't know. I don't know. So I think that for the euro to move up 300 pips at this point, not based on any of the technical work that you've done, just on the ludicrous nature of life, I think you got a really good shot at that coming together. I really do.
It is. It, just on ludicrousness alone, if there's such a word. Let's trade this just on ludicrousness.
It's got a ludicrous factor of like plus 100, so I think it'll probably happen. You know, throw in your technical work on top of it. Well, I don't want to call it a slam dunk, but...
could happen. What a world.
Yeah. It used to be the markets, a wonderful life.
Go ahead.
And now it's...
The markets switch back and forth between, you know, somewhat intuitive to some people and then completely non-intuitive. And it's the non-intuitive trades that are the easiest ones. If not easy for you to want to trade it or be in it, but if you were in it, they run to their numbers very quickly. Precisely because they seem non-intuitive. It's kind of like inversions. When an inversion happens, the market runs really fast to those levels. And that's why you must use risk management if you're going to trade. You have to, because you're going to get stuck in one of those, whether you recognize it as an inversion or know it to be one or not. When they do occur, the fast moves occur, and if you hold on, hoping for a return to these price levels, et cetera, all that junior high school stuff, you're going to get wiped out. You're going to get hurt badly. And there's no need to do that if you protect yourself and trade well. And, you know, we're coming to the point of year, and then I'll disappear for you, Duane, because I know you've got things to do as well, where we're supposed to make our, what do they call it, New Year's resolutions. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling it's going to be an interesting bunch of New Year's resolutions that your listeners and our listeners make this year. I'd like to hear them, and maybe we can spend a day on the radio talking about New Year's resolutions, as meaningless as they may actually end up being. Just what's your intent? What would you like? What would you like to happen next year? What would you like to overcome? You know, people, you know, when Thanksgiving comes, people say what they're thankful for. And, you know, a lot of times when people say what they're thankful for, they're talking about things. They're talking about life situations. I'm thankful for my marriage, or I'm thankful for, you know, this new thing I got, or I'm thankful that my business is doing well. It has to do with having received or gotten something in some way. But there's many other things you can be thankful for in life, other than the giving and receiving in the normal sense of, you know, whether, you know, in the physical world. There's many other things that you can be thankful for. And in many ways, with New Year's resolutions, there's quite a few things that you can, you know, resolutely plan on doing with your life, with the way that you look at things. As an example, I just want to just make a quick note of this. For myself, I'm not going to speak for everybody, but fear is a motivator in all of our lives. We are motivated by fear. And so if somebody says to you that your house is on fire, fear is going to get you to get your relatives out of the house, you and your property, whatever you can to get out of that house. But fear also plays a part in your day-to-day life as well, in without your house being on fire. In fact, everything can be going quite well in your life, and fear can be driving you to be in the middle of that. The fear of everything stopping going well, as an example. Everything's going well, and you think you'd be the happiest man on earth, but here you are frightened because you're afraid that everything good is going to now turn bad. And so you can see that there's a habit of fear that even for people who have good things, this is when you see this with movie stars and you see this with people who have achieved great things in life, whether they're a basketball player, a movie star, or whatever, and they're very happy to be in that position, but they're also quite afraid of now losing that position. And so you can imagine, imagine that if you had that feeling yourself on a small level, imagine somebody who gets into a position where he has a run and he makes, you know, whatever number you want to make it. He makes $20 million making a movie and things are going well for him. And now, because that's such a big lift for him, he's now that much more afraid of losing that.
Yep. Now you got to build the walls and figure out how you're going to protect it and hide
it. And what if your next movie flops? And what if your next, you know, love interest flops? This is a big motivating force. And so for me, one of the things, I'm mentioning this because this is in me as well, obviously, I want to get past and overcome that. I know that I have on certain levels, in certain ways, done that. But I want to go further into that because the areas that I've been able to get through that and not live by that have been, it's tremendously freeing. And you don't know what a prisoner you are until they set you free. So you have to go through some of this in order to see that you previously weren't very free to do what you want and say what you want, because this fear is actually dominating you, whatever it is for you individually in your life. And so that's one of my New Year's, that's going to be my New Year's resolution, is I'm not going to live afraid. And we're not even talking about business. It can be very, very minor little things that are working on you all day and all night, and before you know it, you are living your life in a very compressed way, walking down these hallways, and those hallways are built by your own fear. Those little walls are there, and a good day for a person who lives that way is you don't see the wall. You know, you're living somewhere in the between those two walls. You don't have to run into the wall and see your own fear. And so that then becomes a good day for you. That's not good enough. You know, I'm not going to go on that way myself. And I invite you to think about your own life and become more aware of how fear is a motivator and how it's a freedom taker. You don't have the freedom to do whatever you want, because your life may, in fact, be dominated by fears of all kind. And so something we can talk about. But for the time being, I would love to hear from the listeners what their New Year's resolutions are going to be, even if you fail miserably at them. Just what are your intents? And maybe we can do that on a day coming up to Christmas here.
Yeah, no, I'd like that, David. I think that's a good idea. And as you think about your New Year's resolutions, because David said that at Thanksgiving we said and we talk about, and a lot of families, a lot of homes, people go around the table, what am I thankful for? And sometimes we are thankful for things. And certainly there's nothing wrong with, you know, having things. God bless the man who God has blessed to have some things. But what David has talked about just now, this fear thing, if you could just get that monster out of your life. If fear comes not just as some, you know, burglar in the night, it comes in the form of a mole on your back or that envelope on your desk that you're afraid to open. You're pretty sure you know what it says inside. And, you know, you could anguish. You could go through a case of gin worrying about what's on the inside of that envelope. But you know what? Ultimately, whatever's in there is going to come get you, if it is. Or you might open it and find out that it really isn't what you thought it was. Yeah, but it had that logo on it. But it turns out there's actually a check in there for $450. What a mind blower that is. So confront your fears, and for each person it's different. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm saying that you should consider how you do it and what it takes. Okay, well, if I do open it, and now if our mind, it's a funny thing, because it will imagine every possible worst-case scenario in an instant. Why doesn't it also imagine that there could be a $450 check in the envelope? Why does our mind automatically think, boy, they're coming to take it all? And it doesn't naturally swing the other way. It's something that you have to work at. And so you go down that list. You say, okay, all right, worst case, it is this. What happens? Okay, then that happens, and then that happens, and that. Pretty soon, you drag it out in the light of day, which also involves along the way that you have to actually open the envelope. Or you actually have to go to a doctor and say, hey, you know what? Put this thing under the scope and, you know, let me know if it's something or nothing. Because you know what? If it's nothing, but in your mind it's something, that is its own cancer in your brain, eating away at whatever bit of peace and joy that you have. So, in my opinion, man, there could be no bigger New Year's resolution than to say that I will no longer be a slave to fear. And it's tough. I'm telling you, it's tough. But think about it like this. Happiness, we always talk about, you know, I just want to be happy. We ask people, hey, you know, what is it you really want out of life? Oh, I just want to be happy. And everyone has different definitions of happiness. But it always comes back to this. Happiness depends on an external set of circumstances. While true peace and joy are an eternal spring that dwells within. Think about that as you sit down to make your New Year's resolution.
Well said, Dwayne. And yes, we'll find out from our listeners what they want. I know what they're all going to say. I want, a Lamborghini such and such. I want it. No, I'm just joking. Whatever their favorite thing is. But no, I'd be curious to know. And you notice as you get older, not for everybody, but as you get older, it starts being more meaningful things, not just things, but it becoming to overcome something. Success isn't getting something. Success is getting over something, meaning having it not bother you anymore, having seen through it, etc. And once you're there, you're like an eagle flying over, you know, a desert. You're not bothered by that at all. You can land there if you want, and then you can take off again. But it's a nice place to visit, but you wouldn't want to live there. So that's big for me because, as you start to look at your life more and more, you realize that no matter what's happening so-called externally, it's all being experienced internally. And so even that thing that is giving you the excitement or whatever you think you want to buy or whatever, it's really an internal experience. And, of course, what we're talking about here is the fear of either not getting it or the fear of getting it and then the fear of losing it. There's always a fear that comes along with everything. And I've noticed for myself, and I'll just say this and then I'll scoot along, that you will literally, by a mechanism that you may not see yet, you literally create the very scenarios that your fear is afraid of. Because fear is, you know, when you are not afraid, your energy is coming from you going outward, and people can feel you. They can feel your energy. They feel you. They feel good. They feel that you're out and you're giving, and the flow is, that's proper. The flow channel is working correctly. When fear turns on, that flow turns backwards, and the energy now is coming towards you. Your own energy is coming towards you, and it's being used to vibrate negatively. And so all that nice natural energy, that outflow that you have, is now turned towards yourself, and it's not turned in a good way, it's turned in a bad way. It turns into like a sawtooth wave. You know, if somebody was looking at an oscilloscope, maybe fear would be a sawtooth wave. And you're attacking yourself with a sawtooth wave constructed of your own energy. Your own energy, that's when you feel bad, when you feel afraid, that's your own energy turning on yourself in a negative way. And it doesn't feel good. It puts you into a bad state of mind, and it also changes your value and your judgments. And before you know it, you're doing the very things that create that same thing out there that you were afraid of happening. So
It's a big subject. Or put it this way, it's a subject that should be looked at, because you don't want to live your whole life under that gun. You don't want to live your whole life every time you get something being afraid to lose it. The next thing you should buy without a care in the world of losing it. You should just enjoy it, and you'll find that when you don't have the fear of losing it, you enjoy it a whole lot more, and it lasts a whole lot longer for some reason, because you're not setting up the very conditions for its disappearance. So, something to think about. And, Dwayne, we'll talk about that. I'm really interested to hear what your guests, what your listeners have to say.
Right.
I know the guy that wrote the random walk down Wall Street, he's probably just expecting some random gift of some kind, or I'm not sure, but you know, we'll ask him too.
All right, buddy.
What his New Year's resolution is.
So,
anyway, Dwayne, a pleasure being on the program. I'll plan on talking with you tomorrow, and we'll put all this stuff together with gold and the S&P as we get a little closer to these critical points.
Sounds good, David. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you, Dwayne. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you. Every day's a new day.
All right, guys. That's my cue to get up and get out of here. Rest of your day. Man, I got stuff on top of stuff. But it's the beauty of life, right? We woke up today. Get to do stuff. Now, the swing trade that went off on Friday, 10:47 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, triggered Sunday night on the Globex Open. It has gone from the 11:72 entry to the 11:96, which was a previous weekly trading zone. We're not ruling out a further move to the upside, but since we got up into this area early this morning in the live trading room, we started talking about potentially a good place to take profit. If you do, then you've got to be okay with it running further. Okay, that's going to happen. Over 31 signals. The average swing has been 34 points. The smallest, 5. One never got out of the gate. Then the smallest was 5. The biggest was 99. Those are outliers. Okay. Take those out of the equation. Average is 34. Does that mean the next one should go 34? No. No, see, 34 is, you get into that whole statistical averaging thing, which some of you may be very good at and lean towards. I see 20 points as 20 points. So it's up to you how you want to play it. Now, I do need to say this. That is the first alert for those of you who signed up for the beta test. Okay, as a beta tester, we thank you for participating. You've got 2 more signals to go. We are not accepting any more beta testers at this point. Now, we made an announcement a few weeks ago that everyone who at the time was a current CFRN partner would be grandfathered in. That is true. You have to be an active partner as of that day or regain your active status, whatever that means to you. And not for the beta. Okay, if you're in the beta was open to everybody. But once we finish the 3 swing trades in the beta, that's when we'll roll out the final product. And when will that be? It's really going to depend on the market and how the beta test shakes out. In that, and by shaking out, I mean our method of communicating the information to the subscriber or to the CFRN partner. For partners, let me say it again, once we go live with the service, you must be an active partner, okay? There have been a couple of emails on that, and that's the deal. So, when we do go live, we may wait till the first of the year. With the holidays coming, it might be difficult, but we're gonna let this thing finish up. We're going to get through our 3 trades. We're going to analyze the data. We're going to send out questionnaires to those who participated in the beta test to find out if you got your information in a timely fashion, if we could have gotten it to you in some better manner. I mean, right now we're using email, a locked subscriber-only Twitter feed, and text messaging. Other than smoke signals and carrier pigeons, I'm not sure I know of any other way to get it to you. Okay? We could potentially run a 24-hour chat room that is members only, where the most recent signal is posted there. I just think we're already overdoing it, because some of the partners went and signed up for the beta test on top of already being a partner and being grandfathered in. So those individuals were getting two emails instead of one. So if you fall into that category and you want to just get the one email, then don't unsubscribe from the partner list, unsubscribe from the beta list, okay? Worst case is you get too many emails to alert you to something that's important to you. If it's not important to you, then that's a whole other story. So that's about it. Nice trade, nice run. Let's see if we got any questions here in the box. All right. I guess that's going to do it, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.